This reminds me of a dancing elephant. Maybe that techno noise. I don't really know. I'm picturing a cartoon elephant dancing.
What sort of dance would the elephant be doing?
I don't know what it's called. Just a shimmy. I'm on 4th of July break already.
I guess I could see that. It takes some
doesn't
doing.
Doesn't that sound like the trumpet of an elephant?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what it sounds like.
Back to Brookfield Zoo.
Right.
Welcome aboard.
The dancing show at Brookfield Zoo, the dancing elephant show, was second to none. People would come from miles away, well, yards away.
Now they don't have elephants.
No, not anymore, right?
I know.
Isn't that something?
It's heartbreaking.
That's something. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. It's the elephant dance party that you've wanted so badly for so long. Here it is. It's finally here. Something serious we need to get out of the way really quickly. Yesterday, during the beginning of the show, we talked about you were going to visit a doctor.
A dermatologist.
A dermatologist, strictly on your own, just to make sure you didn't have any skin cancer, right?
Yeah, it's pretty scary, and it's like past damage that you have to worry about.
From years ago, they say, right?
I'm a blonde-haired, blue-eyed. They say if you have blue eyes, you're more susceptible to cancers, skin cancers.
And why would that be? Do we know why?
Just fair skin.
Oh, yeah, all right.
Typically the case.
See that.
And, I mean, really, back when I was growing up, we would lay out
Wendy, can I ask any elephants who are dancing to please pause
your dancing? Oh, they've
already stopped. Just want to make
sure. Now they're sitting cross-legged, and they're paying very much attention.
Yeah, because
they can
know.
Get skin cancer,
sure
too.
Sure they can. Yes.
They don't use SPF.
No, they do not.
They should.
But to start.
When we were growing up, everything's fine, by the way, if I just may get
that
out
there
right away. But I really highly recommend to everybody to go to a dermatologist and just get a full body screening.
What do they do exactly?
They
take pictures? Because a friend of mine explained that they do a thing now called picture mapping, where you go in like once a year and they compare pictures to make sure that nothing has changed dramatically on your body. Did you have that done?
No, but they do that. And we had talked yesterday during Tech Tuesday about some apps that do just that. And I talked to the dermatologist about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, of course, we said it does not. You still should make an appointment at a dermatologist. And she said, I think that's a good idea because that's what we do. They measured moles or anything, and then they keep track of them. I have a mole on my toe, all right? Mm. I've had it my whole life. It's not really gotten bigger. It's flat, even borders. But I started thinking about Bob Marley, who got melanoma on his foot, where that doesn't typically see the sun that much.
Right.
Maybe if you live in Jamaica and you go barefoot. But So, of course, I really want this checked out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always think of Bob Marley, and she said, no, it's fine. But they measured it, and then they'll keep track, and you should get a yearly screen so they can keep track of things.
Do they just look at it, or what exactly do they do to determine? Because some are okay and some are not okay, obviously. So how do they determine?
It wasn't a spelunker's light that I thought she would have.
Light on a helmet?
Yeah, it's not that.
Clip?
It's like what a jeweler would have, but bigger, that like little...
Oh.
And with a light. And she just kind of zooms in, and you sit there with the robe that opens in the back. You can leave your underwear on, unless you have issues there. Then
maybe I don't want to.
Maybe not. And she just kind of looked over things. I have a lot of moles.
How long did the procedure take, start to finish?
Probably 15 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad.
And then
all.
The assistant Julia was there. She was a listener, so that was a little embarrassing.
Oh.
She saw me with absolutely no makeup.
Oh.
And my face looking like Google Maps because I have a lot of broken capillaries. So I may have walked out of there wanting to get some laser treatment to get rid of some of that so I don't have to wear so much makeup.
They could do that. So will there be final results coming in?
No, they didn't have to biopsy anything.
Oh, that's good news.
But they are able to do it if something looks suspicious. It's just, we don't think about doing this.
Yeah.
I mean, we wear SPF now. I have a redhead who's 20, and Dylan is 16, and he tans pretty easily. Mm. So I got to be honest with you, he's the one I'm more worried about.
Sure.
Because I slathered the redhead in SPF.
Yeah.
But our kids used it. We didn't. I used baby oil.
There wasn't a single time as a kid that I ever used any kind of SPF on anything.
And we didn't
Not
have
once.
It.
My sisters used to put baby oil on and lay on the roof
on top of aluminum foil.
Sure.
Yes. I mean, oh, you saw the ladies with the aluminum
that
foil.
That silver glowy thing that you'd put under your neck.
Yes.
And I mean, I do get tan. And in my, you know, teenage mind, it's like, I'm just going to stay in the sun all day and I will get as dark as my friend Sue.
Right.
But I'm much fairer than she is. So I would burn first. I went to St. Lucia with Jim before we got married. And that's like right near the
separate
equator.
Rooms, probably, right?
My parents are dead. It doesn't really matter anymore.
All right.
I told them that, maybe. you're a good derailer.
Sure, the up and up.
And that is right by the equator, and that was probably 25 years ago. And Jim's like, here, you should put some suntan lotion. I'm like, nope, I want to get tan right
away.
Oh my God, that night I was that Solarcane commercial. If you moved to the bottom of my bathing suit, it was red and it was white.
Yes. When's the last time you had a sunburn?
Like a bad one?
Like a sunburn. I don't think I've ever... I can get
sunburn if
like,
I... Had,
that you could feel like, it's burned?
Probably... It's been a couple years. Maybe 5 years.
Yeah, you're more careful
now. I'm totally more careful. Yeah. But all the damage that's happened is what's coming up now.
How did George Hamilton get through this without any kind of skin cancer or issues? Because he was tan... Like, the first time I ever saw him, he was tan, and he's been tan since. How
and
does he pull that off?
I did not ask the dermatologist about this, but I can certainly bet that it's not good. There was a group of kids, maybe our kids' age, maybe they go to tan spas. They pay a monthly fee and go.
Unlimited.
I know, and they say, oh, it's not that bad. I think it's bad.
Yeah. Yep.
It's so weird.
They regulated it as time went on, but still...
I don't know. I like the fake tan stuff. I highly recommend
just
L'Oreal
like a lotion,
Sublime.
Just put it on,
Yeah, because plus I'm too fidgety to lay out anymore.
Oh.
I can't just lay on a lawn chair.
Yeah.
You can.
My favorite thing to do on a vacation is to just lay right by the pool and get a book and read while I'm by the pool. That's just like the best for me. So I have to be more careful. But like I said, for years and years and years, absolutely no kind of SPF at all, and I know that's not good. So I have to do what you did.
All right, Julie, I'm just here to help people. Are you going to get a screening?
What a coincidence. I'm on my way, like, right when we hang up. And I'm red hair. I'm very fair. I'm almost like the absence of color. You look at me, it's like nothing. And when we were little, my mom would slather us with copper tone when we'd go to the beach. But when we'd play outside all day, it's like the sun didn't have those magical properties.
That's true.
And now my redhead chickens have come home to roost. And every year I have to have something removed. But about 10 years ago, I did have a precancerous cell. I'm religious.
I made my appointment for next year already.
Did you?
I just figured I'll forget. So I already made it for next year. It takes 15 minutes. If you have insurance,
it's all covered.
Just a copay.
And if I can add one thing, especially for men who golf, often the tips of your ears or your nose will just get, it almost looks like a pimple that doesn't go away. And that's a real problem. It happened to my husband and he was able to take care of it. But, you know, if you're out in the sun, it can get you.
And melanoma is deadly, and if it's found early, it can be taken care of.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Julie, I hope everything's good today.
Oh, it'll be fine. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
See, that's good. And if I can, while I'm on the medical front.
Yes.
My sister was diagnosed with breast cancer. She had gone to get her mammograms every year. And this year something was funky. She had surgery yesterday and she is doing great. Caught it early. So again, I know sometimes you're like, oh, I don't want to know, or I don't have time. These are two things right here. Women, get your mammograms.
Yep.
I was a year and a half. I was a half a year late, and now again I scheduled every year. It's on my phone. Already made the thing, the appointment, and get a skin screening. I mean, really, I can't Preventative care.
My husband and I go together every year to get our skin screened. It's like right by our
couple's screening.
A couple's screening. Isn't
it's romantic.
Cute? Yeah, he's in one room, I'm in the other, and we end up talking about the same stuff with the doctor. We come out, it's like, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah, Wisconsin.
Yep.
You know, it's pretty funny.
Just do it. Well, I'm glad you do it, Mary, and you do your mammograms, I would imagine.
I have to. I've done them for a long time.
Good. Very good.
So all every these year. Things have caught early, and my sister's doing great.
That's great news.
Just
that's
a lumpectomy, and she is healing, and all is good.
Excellent.
So.
All right.
Check your boobies, Bill.
Yeah, I'm done. Consider it done.
Mine should check, too.
We'll take a quick break, and then there's more of us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.
May I share a text with you, Bill?
I wish you would.
These are just screenings. I feel like, you know, now once you turn the other side of 50, that's what we're going to do every year. We're going to go get skin screenings.
Yep.
We have to throw colonoscopies into the mix.
Now, that one's every... How many years
is
that one?
It just depends. If you do it for fun, you can go every year.
Oh.
You got a clean bill of health. Didn't they say call us in 10 years?
Yes. That happened last year.
Yeah. So last 9 years.
December. I have 9 more years to go.
To stress about it. And you said it wasn't even that bad.
It really is one of the craziest things because I thought about it every day for 2 years. Oh, I dread going in. And then more and more people would say, you didn't even know they do it. You go in, they put you on, you have no idea. It was the easiest procedure. Changing my oil is more stressful than going in for a colonoscopy.
You have to change your own oil?
Yeah, every 10 years. Once every 10 years.
And I mentioned that the blonde hair, blue-eyed, fair skin, mainly people with blue eyes.
The boys from Brazil, basically, is who you just described.
Well, I just want to share this. Wendy, here you go again. Do you know how many blonde-haired, blue-eyed farmers that never wore sunscreen lived into their 90s, no skin cancer? And think about all the chemicals in the SPF. They're finding liver damage and people from all that soaking into their skin.
Hmm. All right.
I'm just telling you what a dermatologist told me, and if you have blue eyes, you are more prone to
more
skin cancers.
Really? I didn't. That's the first I'm hearing that, but I get it.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
All right. Three kids. All my kids have blue eyes. That's not good. All three of them.
Get them checked, Mary.
Again, we were better with our kids.
Yeah,
your
we
kids
were.
Are a little older, but I know if you took your kids to the pool, although I'm listening to that listener say, you know, when they just went out to play, I don't know if we were as diligent with sunscreen as we were.
If you were at a beach
right.
or pool.
I don't think I did it. And, you know, now my little grandchildren, as soon as they just look outside,
I know
they get swabbed, you know, so which is
my
good.
Kids. I don't know about your grandkids, but my daughters just would instinctively put it on. They knew if they were going outside in the summer, you'd see them slathering it on themselves just to get themselves ready again.
Times have changed.
Never occurred to me when I was a kid.
We didn't have it. And we mentioned the baby oil. Mary and I said that. And somebody said, I wore baby oil and we put iodine in it. I did that too for a while.
What was the point of that?
Just to give you the illusion of you being darker and to bring more sun in. I have no idea.
You put lemon juice in your hair?
I did that.
Yeah.
Boy, did it dry it out. But yeah, I got blonder.
Who was the company that put out some sort of a lotion that guaranteed you not just a tan, but a savage tan? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Somebody had a savage tan.
Was it Coppertone?
Banda
Soleil.
No, that was the Saint-Tropez tan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Even the bottle tan. Had a tan. Even the bottle, you would look at the bottle and you go, wow, the bottle looks great.
Well, I, again, like L'Oreal Sublime for the fake tanner, and it really does a great job. You have to do it all the time, though.
Yeah.
And remember QT?
Yes.
Did you ever use it?
No, I don't know. All right. I remember the name, but I don't know what it was.
QT, quick tan. QT tans in 3 to 5 hours.
Right.
With or without sun.
Yeah.
I used it when it was out, and it was orange.
Skin would turn orange?
Yeah.
Anyone use that today?
They've changed the self-tanners so much that really they're not orange anymore. They really aren't. This was like orange.
It was really orange.
And if I'm using it pretty regularly in the summer, I didn't want to start using it till I went to the dermatologist.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to hide anything that they might miss.
Oh, true, right.
I got to start wearing rubber gloves because my hands would be
very dark. All marked up.
Yeah.
I miss the smell of suntan lotion.
Yeah, it had kind of a coconutty smell, right?
Coconut smell, and that was just such a thing.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't smell like that anymore?
I don't think so. I think it smells like safety.
A listener just said Hawaiian Tropic was the one you were thinking.
Hawaiian Tropic had the savage tan.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, that just put you in the mind of, I could get a tan and that would look great, but a savage tan. This will be the best.
And another thing, really quickly, it was called Sun In, and you would spray it on your hair. And I didn't use it
because highlights.
Yeah, I was pretty blonde, but you could tell the girls that used Sun In because they were normally a brunette.
Yes.
But then all of a sudden, their hair was orange in spots. It never really got that blonde. It was orange.
Yeah. But on the commercials, it looked foolproof. It looked like, you get some of that.
Yep.
Perfect.
Well, just take care of yourself, people. That's all I want to say. Get your screenings, because that's what we do now.
Can I still wear my jean cutoffs that are so short that the pockets show underneath?
Yeah, Steve, that's never going
to
go out of style.
I would pay $100 if you wore those to work next time I work.
Really?
Yeah. Your Daisy Dukes?
Is that a Monday?
Bring $100 with you on Monday.
I will do it.
I know Steve will do it.
All right.
No, we got the recording. I have the ones where it's like the fringe, you know.
Yeah.
But then somewhere I did little checkerboard cuts.
Yep.
You
That's
did.
A good
you,
look.
He's like a fashion designer.
Solid look, Steve.
All right, quick break, then news.
Steve, Wendy has a question for you.
You're a jerk.
What?
It's a legitimate question.
That's a statement.
Bill, you can
That's
ask
opinion.
It.
What's the question, Wendy? Don't be ashamed. Any question's fine.
It's
for me.
It's from a texter, technically. 708 says, Newsman Steve, foliage, really?
I know. You know, that's so funny I said that, because I never say that.
It's foliage. We all know that.
And I know people who always say foliage.
I do, too. Yes. And it drives me nuts.
And I never say it. And I'm looking at the word. I'm saying, don't say foliage.
And that's why you did.
Of course. Yeah. thank you very much, Wendy, for that probing question.
708, thank you very much.
I'm glad I could clear the air.
Foliage, doily. Foilage.
It's the Oi Show.
Yeah.
Oi!
Oi. I have to say that on my way home yesterday, I heard on the news.
All right, he's not finished
what,
yet.
Steve, what else?
That's the reaction? They're killing iguanas and you're worried about how I'm pronouncing the plants?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Well, it's wrong.
Did you hear the story?
No. That's why I didn't notice.
I know. They've got so many iguanas in South Florida. The state's saying, start killing them. They're telling people, kill them on your property.
Ugh.
Do they suggest how to do it?
They don't give you an idea of how to do it, but
it's up to your own device.
Right. They're pretty gentle. Easy to
don't
smack on the head.
Them.
Right.
Steve!
It's the state saying it, not me.
Can I just say they're
worried about their foliage.
I was letting the dog out in the backyard two nights ago, and I heard this like little purring, squeaking kind of sound.
Yes,
and then I heard nails crawling up a tree. Now I brought the dog inside. I went and got my super magna light, my flashlight.
Yeah,
and I was walking around, but I was doing it very timidly because I was afraid something was going to jump on my head.
Sure.
And I didn't know if it was like the chupacabra or whatever. It was really like scratching.
Oh.
And so I was looking around, and our neighbor behind us and diagonally over has a big tree, and it kind of forks when it goes up. So there's almost like a little area in the middle that seemed open. And I saw four baby raccoons that could not be any cuter.
Mm-hmm.
But those four baby raccoons are going to turn into big raccoons and raid my garbage can. And then a little earlier, I was sitting out on the patio. The dog was in the yard, and I saw something go past me. This was last week, and it's dusk. It's not even dark yet. And I saw something in the corner of my eye, and I'm like, oh, what's Kona doing? That's not Kona. It was an opossum or a possum.
Yeah.
And it was walking just right on our deck, like right past me with babies attached to it.
Oh,
it looked like it had the mange.
Baby possums, Wendy? Or just...
No, human babies.
Oh, that's crazy. You got to report that immediately.
Do you think the babies were going willingly?
I'd say no to that one.
It was weird because it looked like, you know, when you see a possum, first of all, when you see an animal in your yard that's not your dog.
Throws you.
It totally,
sure
plus
it
when
does.
Your dog's in the yard.
Right.
So Kona kind of just went nose to nose to it, and I, you know, grabbed him very
there
quickly.
There was no scuffle? I would have expected some sort of a fight.
No hissing?
Nothing?
The opossum hiss. Is it possum or opossum?
Possum.
It's technically a possum, but people just say possum.
All right. Well, the possum hissed at Kona, and I grabbed him back because I was worried he was going to get bitten.
Yep.
Possumized. But I'm surprised he didn't like go to attack it, but it was big, and it looked gross and mangy and ripply, and then I realized those were all little babies stuck to it. So I have four baby raccoons and about six baby opossum.
You should
build
an
ark. Daycare center.
I went biblical, Steve.
I know.
You went practical. I went biblical.
I went commercial, yeah.
But where are all these animal's going to go now when these babies grow? Can I just say I'm a little distracted because the window washers were out here, and I just saw what looked like the rope break.
No.
I'm not kidding.
No, it's fine. These guys are professionals.
Where's the rope?
They're done. They're done. When you're done.
It looked like it unraveled and.
And then that was the end of it? No, you would have heard that thing you hear in movies. Yeah, the fadeaway. You would have heard the fadeaway scream. You didn't
but
hear
so iguanas, I couldn't kill an iguana. I can't kill an opossum. And I can't kill baby raccoons.
Well, but now those raccoons, that she's going to be really aggressive and protective.
Yep.
I didn't see the mom raccoon.
Well, the mom's
just the babies.
There.
The babies were in the tree, and it's so cute because when the light shines on their eyes, they look at you
glisten.
Like, what is that? What are you doing? Go away.
It's all new to them.
You should get really close to them, take some pictures, see what happens.
Do a selfie with them.
You'll be wearing a raccoon hat before you know it.
Wendy Crockett.
I'm going home. You guys don't even need me today.
Yes, we do.
I couldn't see him in all the foliage.
Oh,
it was really hard to see.
See that?
Wow.
So she blames you. Boom, boom, right on it.
That was all a setup to make fun of Steve Bertrand.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
All right. Can we just, I'm sorry, there's an iguana call we have to take.
Sure.
Hi, Rich. You used to live in Florida. Did you have an iguana problem?
Not really an iguana problem, but we had them running through our neighborhood like rats. But the thing is, they're not totally harmless. I will tell you the truth. If you try to catch one, their first response is they're going to run. They are not going to attack you. But if you corner them and they have no other defense, A, they've got very sharp teeth, and B, if they whip you with their tail can almost cut down to the bone if it isn't the right way.
Well, how does that happen? Is it like razor sharp?
Well, it is a very sharp, hard tail. My favorite Curtis story was calling one of my neighbors and trying to convince her I wasn't pranking her, telling her not to go out her front door because there was about a 6-7 foot gator sunning himself on her front stoop. She had a house on the canal.
No.
Florida.
Yikes. So scary.
So iguanas aren't totally harmless, but like I said, in reality, their first thing to do when threatened, they're going to run. They're never going to attack you. But
so how would
you
suggest
something stupid, like try to catch it with your bare hands, you're going to get bit and it's going to hurt.
How do you suggest the people of South Florida start killing their iguanas?
Don't ask that question.
I don't know because I lived in a residential neighborhood, so obviously shooting them is out of the question.
It's not obvious. But
beyond that, I would say, honestly, call a professional exterminator. I wouldn't say leave out poison because you've also got your neighbor's dogs, cats, etc., and you don't want to kill them. Yeah, that's one of the things I would leave to the professional. Me, they never bothered me because, you know, I really didn't have fancy plants around the house. If they want to eat the grass, go at it. Less lawn I have to cut.
So scary. Well, thank you for telling us this, Rich. Appreciate it.
So if Rich had invested in better foliage,
I might have had
trouble.
Different story.
Thank you, Rich. And Chris has texted us. I read the story online about the iguanas. The professional pest removers are shooting them in the head.
Oh.
There was also a picture of a person holding one. They can grow to 5 feet long.
5 feet long. Imagine just opening up a door and you walk out onto your... there's a 5-foot-long iguana there.
Manana iguana. Wasn't there a kid book called that?
It's like a Geico commercial.
Right. But that one is just like 7 inches. He's adorable. But
they're pretty
cute. Five-footer.
Yeah.
All right. A break and then more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy, I tried so hard yesterday on my way home to not just listen to, but to enjoy the women's soccer match. And I have to say, it came up short for me.
You don't like soccer, nor do I, and I feel a little guilty.
It's not that I don't like it. I think it's that I don't understand all the rules of it. And I know the goal.
You get the ball
in
the goal.
You're supposed to get the ball in the net. I understand that part of it. But there's a lot of intricacies to the game. And also the fact that because I don't know the players. Yesterday, the American team was playing the British team. So you'd say, Watley passes to Logan. Logan's shot is blocked by Stratford. And I go, Stratford, where'd they come? Where'd she come from? But I don't know who's who. I don't know who I'm rooting for. And in the crowd, you had some people rooting for England and others for the United States. So no matter what would happen, there was a roar of the crowd. So as I'm driving, I'm like, well, the crowd isn't, is that good? I don't know if that's good or not. That went on for an hour and a half.
You listened to it for an hour and a half?
I got home. You have to understand, for people who are not in radio, the ultimate compliment was somebody will say, I got to my destination, but I didn't want to stop listening. So the game was 2-1 late in the second half.
Who was up? Did you know that?
I knew that the U.S. was leading. But I didn't understand, Like, they don't give you the time. Like, in baseball, they'll tell you what inning it is. Or in football, they'll say with 3:10 left in the second quarter. They don't do that in soccer. They tell you what minute of the game they're in. So you have to do the math. It's up to you to subtract and go, okay, so.
How long is a soccer game? 35th
minute. Oh, it's days. It's like days and days and days. It's 90 minutes. It's 2 45-minute halves, I believe. But yesterday, like, they kept saying toward the end of the game, they'd say, this is how they would give the time. They'd say, it's 2-1 U.S., and we're in the 6th minute of stoppage. And I don't know what that means. So I go, wow.
So what they would do is, you know, the clock keeps running through the half.
Right.
But if there's a delay, like an injury or something like that, or substitution,
they stop it.
One official keeps track of how much time that is. So at the end of the 45 minutes, they add the stoppage time. So if they wasted away 8 minutes in the first half with injuries or arguments or things like that, they add that to stoppage.
So stoppage time differs from game to game. It's not always going to be the same.
Yeah,
right?
From half to half. Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
So the game can go like 95 minutes or, you know, 100 minutes. You never know when it's going to end because it's only up to that ref.
Even the announcer, Wendy, yeah, as the game ended, one of the announcers said, there's not that many kicks left in the game, and the game's over. Like, he stopped himself explaining that the game's almost over to announce that the game was over.
Did I hear a report yesterday that the U.S. women won in 22 minutes? Like, what does that mean?
You can't win in 22 minutes.
I heard somebody won a soccer match. Like, how could you do that?
That I don't understand.
They may have scored the two goals of the game in 22
that's
minutes.
That's possible. Yeah.
All right, I don't understand
early.
Any of it.
Yeah. But now, here's the fun controversy that happened in yesterday's game. And I didn't get to see this because I was listening on the radio, but then I watched it later on SportsCenter. One of the players on the U.S. team is a girl named Alex Morgan. She scored the decisive goal. She got the second goal for the U.S., which ended up being the winning goal. Her winning celebration was to drink tea. She pantomimed that she had a cup with tea, and she politely sipped the tea.
Because she beat the British people.
Because she was playing England.
Yeah.
Right. So it was described on the radio, but I didn't get to see it. But then later on when I saw it, I went, that's no big deal. She wasn't really taunting them. She was just doing something to say, hey, British people, look at me. I'm just like, look, I've got tea. Like,
I think that it's funny.
I thought it was, too.
Is it not right to
they
do?
Were not happy about it.
I think that's in bad taste.
Why?
Is it? Yeah, I think that's not sportsmanlike. Not
why? Steve?
I would have said when I was trying to kick a goal, and if I was her, I would have said, oh, you dropped your scone. And then they would have looked for the scone. I mean, how right? is this disrespectful?
Why did you think it was bad, Steve?
I just think it's not the way a victor should behave.
To pretend to politely sip tea?
Putting down the other country?
Did you see it, though? It's so polite.
It looks more like she's smoking a joint, to be honest with you. With her pinky up. That's what it looks like.
It's gloating. It's not celebrating your own goal. It's gloating over your opponent.
It was a cute little thing.
Listen to what one of the announcers, this is Leanne Sanderson, who is British and a former soccer player herself, listen to her reaction upon Alex Morgan pretending to drink tea to celebrate her goal.
Yeah, you know, I think tonight I expected Alex to grab a goal, but I'm not that happy with that celebration. You can celebrate however you want, but that for me is a bit distasteful, and I don't think she needs to do that. She can celebrate however she wants, and I'm a big believer in the Americans and how they celebrate, but for me this was a little bit disrespectful.
It is her 30th birthday, to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, maybe that's why she celebrated like that, but for me, I think I could be wrong, but it's based upon playing against England, and we love our tea in England. I'm not a tea drinker, but, you know, that's what we're connected with. So I'm a little bit, I think it's a little bit distasteful.
I like the second guy who just drops it in. It's your birthday. A girl can pretend to drink tea on a birthday.
maybe that's why.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what was going on.
I mean, would they beat the Italians? Would she be spinning like a pizza? Or
no, you do the twirl of the fork with the spaghetti.
Yeah, you spool the pasta. Yeah,
I am putting my foot down.
If you're the French,
there's nothing wrong with this.
She wasn't mocking, you know.
She was kind of going, hello, have your tea, we won.
Bill,
so that, what?
That is exactly what she was doing. She was mocking.
What would the British people do to us? Oh, God, you can think of a million things.
They would pantomime our election being tampered with.
How do you do that?
Well, take some choreography.
That'd be difficult.
Oh, come on, lighten up. This is not. This wasn't disrespectful.
Of course it was.
It was a joke.
But it's the most
jokes
polite.
Are disrespectful.
But them drinking tea, that's not a slam. If I meet a person from England and say, "Oh, do you like tea?" They wouldn't
right.
go, "Well, my word, why'd you ask me that?"
Right. She wasn't pantomiming poor dental care, right?
You like, should
like,
be. Okay.
Like, if somebody did that, then you go, oh, that's horrible.
So the Brits score and they win. What, you behave like you're a fat person who can't walk up the stairs?
If you can do that where people would get it, who cares?
Right. You pretend you're ordering fast food.
Right, exactly.
And you just keep eating it.
You go to a McDonald's drive-up or
biggie
something.
Biggie size.
So you're laughing about it, Steve. This is really not that bad. Come on.
I think it is mocking them. I think there's a way to celebrate without mocking your opponent. Thank you, Mary. Mary, did you
hear that? Yeah, I think Mary,
you surprised me.
Did you guys see? I mean, you've heard us describe it, but to see it, because it's so subtle, it's just her being polite and just drinking tea with her pinky up. It's just, it's funny, I thought.
It is. I'm not buying this. I'm sorry.
Well, I will say I have not seen it. I'm only going by Bill's description.
It's the most
subtle. Just Google it, it'll pop right up.
I'm doing other things.
In the history of sports, I've seen excessive celebrating, but this is just so small and polite, you know? But the Brits will take none of it. They're very, very upset at the way we mishandled it.
Well, they were upset before because we visited their hotel.
All right, there's that.
Right?
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah.
I don't know what that's about, but...
Again, they were... Maybe it's not... Maybe it's poor sportsmanship, but to offend British people because of drinking tea,
right.
I take offense to that.
Right, right.
They drink tea. They like tea. That girl that announced it said, I do like my tea.
Right. It's a fact. Do you think Alex Morgan already had this prepared? Like, do you think she kept this in her back pocket? Like, if I score a goal, I know who I'm playing. I'm playing England. So I'm going to do something that really gets to their core. I'm going to do everything I can to do something so overly British that it really upsets them. Or do you think it was just a spur of the moment? I scored a goal. Look, there's English people. I'm drinking tea.
I think it was spur of the moment. And
yeah,
I don't
too.
Think she was trying to get anyone mad.
Right.
I think she was just trying to be silly, like, oh, look, we
right.
did. I can't believe
if they were playing France, you smoke a cigarette. You pretend you're smoking a cigarette.
Or
two cigarettes.
You know, pull out a beret from your shorts and put it on.
Right.
You do a little mime.
Yes.
Oh, see, now you're getting in on it.
No, I'm not. It's still, you know, or you do a Jerry Lewis routine. I don't
right.
know.
But guys,
right.
British people drinking tea is not a slam.
It's making fun of them.
It's making fun of the team you just beat.
No,
but it's so subtle, Steve.
But
it's
celebrate,
so subtle.
Celebrate your win without putting down the most cliche thing anyone ever. Joe Maddon said it yesterday. Well, you got to give credit to the Pirates. You know,
yes.
You know, people do that. You don't rip on your opponent
right.
like that.
You show them some respect. But I think in the moment, she realized what was going on there. Hey, our teams are moving on to the championship. I'll just be a little funny.
It was that. It was just that. It was
yes.
funny. I
yes.
don't think it was meant to be disrespectful to all British people. It was
right.
meant to gloat.
Right.
That's it.
Okay, so gloating. So you're saying you're proud of your representatives who gloat.
No, but I'm saying I understand how it happens. I said she may fall under the poor sportsmanship.
Right.
But it's not, like, offensive to the British people.
What if, Steve, she had done a short Mr. Bean routine? Just like a 2-minute.
Like with the turkey on the head?
The turkey on the head or the corn on the cob bit that he does. Any of that.
Yeah, that would be about the same.
That would be worse.
Now, what if they teamed up and done a Benny Hill routine at hyperspeed?
Oh, yeah. Like tapping on the back of the head.
Chasing the good-looking girl through.
One guy runs to the left, then she runs to the right, then he runs to the left. Any of that would have worked.
Get over it, people. I'm sorry.
I think what we're trying to say is congratulations to the United States for beating England, and good luck on Sunday. That's what we're trying to say.
Can I have a spot of tea?
Sure. I'll have a little bit of tea.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's busy in that Northwestern Medicine newsroom doing other stuff. It's WGN.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal comes by every other Wednesday and we talk about a bunch of different things. Somehow food comes up quite often, doesn't it, Dane?
Yeah, it does. And it was front and center in a big way, and combined with all the stars of motorsports and racing and outside and tailgating and all sorts of stuff for the BBQ smoke down at Chicagoland Speedway. Now, you guys have heard me talk a little bit about it.
This for years.
Now, it feels like it, right? But this is an event that we put together with the Speedway, and it happened just last weekend. And what it was, you know, 42 teams in a KCBS competition that gets them into the American Royal and into the draw for the Jack Daniels Invitational. It was demos with barbecue Hall of Famers like Myron Mixon, Ray Lampe, Chris Lilly, chop challenges with NASCAR drivers and a bunch of different stuff, and those teams, and they all competed, and one team reigned supreme. You guys have seen on social media and the pictures of the trophy by Speakeasy, and one team reigned supreme, and Brendan Dwyer, he was leading. Of course, his dad Brian is in on that, but Brendan was there with the BBQ bus, and they were the grand champions, and Brendan Dwyer is on the line with us. So Brendan, welcome to WGN, champ.
Well, thanks, Dane. I appreciate it, man.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That is the coolest looking trophy ever, with a rack of ribs and a car.
Yeah, we loved it.
Brendan, so. I know you can't give away your secret, but what's your secret?
I wish I could tell. Keep it simple, stupid.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, they did it. Not only did that, you had some of the greatest teams and best teams from around the country, but Brendan's there with the BBQ bus, and it is a school bus. And before we let you go and have you give kind of the ways people can follow your adventures, talk a little bit about the bus. I mean, it's a school bus, so we've all been on them, but on the inside, it's not a school bus.
Yeah, so the front half is where we kind of sleep and relax, and the back half, me and my father, Brian Dwyer, actually tore it out and made it into a kitchen and a prep area, so we're able to cook in the back and hang out in the front, which is nice.
It was great to have you there, and I know all the Hall of Famers were excited to meet you as well. If you want to recognize the members on your team that were there with you and helping you cook?
Yeah, sure. So the original team is, well, the original. The team right now is me and my father, Brian Dwyer. And then there's a couple people that I'd like to give shout-outs to that I think deserve recognition. One, Caitlin, my girlfriend, a lot of help this weekend and this season. She's making our magic chicken box now. Erica LeBaire is doing a lot of our social media stuff. Carly Galzunas, actually a master judge that kicks us into shape. Dylan Leip helped us get into this sport, and he's done a lot for us. And last but not least, Scotty Johnson is a barbecue legend. He's helped us along and really taught us a lot.
So. I went to kindergarten with Scott Johnson.
Uh-oh, really? You're disqualified, Brendan.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you're disqualified.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, I've known him since kindergarten.
Wow. All right. Well, he knows a thing or two. Not only does he know Wendy, but a thing or two about barbecue as well. Mm-hmm. And last thing, and congratulations, let the listeners know, from 7 to 10 on 4th of July, we're going to have a big kind of 4th of July preview. We're going to kind of go in depth on some of the things as well. But for people who are hearing you now, want to follow your adventures, let them know where they can go.
Yeah, so the Instagram is, the handle is the_BBQ_bus, and then the Facebook is the barbecue bus at the barbecue bus one. Also, real quick, I'd just like to give a shout out and congratulate Steve Hayden from 1-2 Barbecue. He's a great cook. He's an even better guy, and we attribute a lot of our success to what he's taught us this season.
All right. Brendan, really, really quick, you just said the words magic chicken box. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't call you out on that. What does that mean, magic chicken box?
So my girlfriend makes the best kale box I've ever seen in my life. It looks like a putting green. I'm pretty sure you could stick a T and T off on it. So that's our magic chicken box.
All right.
There's no secret to it. It's just she's great at what she does.
All right. Very, very good. Right. Congratulations.
Thanks, Brendan. Congratulations, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thank you very much.
Congrats.
Brendan Dwyer, the winner, the grand champion.
Yeah, so the appearance is a big part of it. And if you've got someone kind of styling your box when you open it up, the judges see it, and you know, the first impressions are great to make. It sounds kind of naughty, but it's not. It's the kale and the other things like that. Well, kale...
Sorry, I'm like a 12-year-old boy all of a sudden.
Yeah,
my box got stopped.
All right.
So here's the thing. So with the competition is behind us, now people are looking forward to what is going to be, I think, the most extended and anticipated 4th of July style grilling and eating weekend ever, right?
Yeah.
It's on the Thursday it starts, and it's going to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Everybody's going to wonder what to do. You know, mm-hmm. you want to mix it up, keep it fresh,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're going to want those great equipment. You're going to want all the kind of things that you're going to want to do, tips on what to make.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Dan Marguerite from the Backyard Barbecue Store in Wilmette.
He making a return visit to the show.
He's a guru. You know, there's a lot of places out there, hardware stores, Home Depot. They do a great job.
Yeah.
And they sell grills and things like that. But Backyard Barbecue, it is the Taj Mahal for the taste buds. And he's got a little bit of insight for us. Hey, Dan, welcome.
Dan, how are you? Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
We're always shocked when someone comes back.
It's my pleasure.
Good.
Can I ask you a question? I've been grilling my whole life. I started with charcoal. Now I like the gas because it's easier. Oh, he just made a wincing face. It's just easier for me. But do I need a smoker? What would a smoker do to help my life?
Well, a smoker adds a little bit of flavor, more flavor than the gas grill. I mean, when you cooked on charcoal, you know the flavor you got from
that. I got to tell you, I can't tell the difference.
You can't tell the difference? No? Not at all? Oh, you've offended Dan.
No?
Really?
She didn't offend me. Sorry. I'm shocked. Yeah, no. Every year I go to the Weber training, and the people at Weber say, well, we polled, 200 people, and 80% can't tell the difference between charcoal and gas, and I'm shocked.
80%
can't tell the difference, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, I can't.
You're in that 80%.
Yeah.
So a smoker would get you can get an electric one, a pellet one, a charcoal one. There's propane ones even, which will add some flavor. So you can't, a smoker will help for certain types of meat.
And less maintenance while you're cooking it?
Well, some of them are just set it and forget it. You could set it this morning and leave for work and go home and your brisket's done. And you can monitor from your phone right here.
What?
From your phone.
That's absolutely.
All right, I kind of like that idea. So, boy, that's the way to do it. If you're having a party, you just put it in the smoker. You don't have to really worry about it till it's finished.
100%.
And Dan's got stuff over there. I mean, all sorts of different things. But you can have anything that fits your lifestyle. You can have – I saw some smokers over the weekend that you could pick up and flip the legs out of, like they were like a little tiny card table.
Oh, nice.
You can almost kind of take it with you and carry it. And then there's some, obviously, that are, a trailer.
Be honest, Dan. Grilling by phone doesn't have all the same fun. When you're right there by the grill, you're smelling it, you're seeing it, you're tasting it. But when it's on the phone, you're losing a little bit, right?
Yes. Yeah. But it's also usually smoking by phone.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's usually low and slow, so it's going to take you a lot of hours.
Yes.
So you can leave.
Okay.
And you can still do that over charcoal. Like on a Big Green Egg, they sell a device that will monitor the fire, and it will text you when the meat is done. If you're out shopping, you got to get home.
Your virtual grilling assistant.
That's amazing.
So when I think of grilling, it's like tonight, I'm going to grill.
Yeah.
What you making?
Tonight, I'm smoking some pork belly during the day, and then I'm going to grill burgers and dogs, kind of a classic.
I love that. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing is, they say, and a lot of different people in the industry and some of the legends all say that, we're kind of hardwired to this sort of all the way back to the caveman days, our association with meat over a fire kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it by phone, does that sort of disconnect a little bit of the primordial senses?
I would, yes. I mean, like what Bill just said. But a lot of that stuff is low and slow. I mean, let's face it, men and a lot of women love to cook over open fire, whether mm-hmm. it's a Weber kettle, whether it's putting a grate on your fireplace. And there's a lot of different grills that I sell that take just wood.
Mm-hmm.
And it's people love fire.
Well, here's the thing, too, is they say, especially on the smoker side, if you're cooking, they say, if you're looking, you're not cooking. So you shouldn't even have anything to see anyway, right, Dan?
True. If you open the lid, just keep an eye on it for a remotely.
Low and slow, looking, not cooking. Everything rhymes in the grilling business.
As soon as you lift that lid, you see the temperature like completely fluctuate.
Sure. For sure.
Yep. All right. We'll take a break. We'll discuss more of your 4th of July cooking next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill and Wendy with you on WGN, along with Dane Neal from On the Road with Dane Neal. You can hear that on weekends.
I do hear that on the weekends.
Yeah, that's the best time to hear because that's when you do it.
Right.
Dan Margarita is also here. We're talking about Backyard Barbecue, his establishment in Wilmette, just off of Green Bay Road, correct?
Yeah. 535 Green Bay Road.
Yep.
They have everything, including a little bit of insight, too. So we talked about what Dan's going to be doing, and people want a little, some suggestions, some great suggestions on not only what to make, but maybe how to make it. And so I know you guys off the air were talking a little bit about burgers and hot dogs, even some of the things that aren't kind of those tougher sort of barbecue related meat. It's just regular stuff, but there's a great way to go ahead and elevate those and make them as good as they can be.
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking to things, we're talking burgers, dogs, steaks. I mean, that's what I consider grilling, so it's usually fairly quick. I mean, mm-hmm. it could be a little bit longer if it's a thicker cut of meat, but it's key is cooking it to the proper temperature too.
I ruin my burgers. I hand form them, and I try to smash them down a little bit prior to putting them on the grill, and they still come out tasting like meatloaf. I there's no juice left in them.
What am I doing wrong?
Well, I'm guessing you're overcooking it. If it tastes like meatloaf, I mean, meatloaf is in the oven for a long time. You can also try to put a little dimple in it in the middle.
Is that really true?
It kind of puffs up a little bit.
It'll look like Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Burger.
I like that.
I've heard that, to press your thumbprint in the middle just so it doesn't...
and get a good hot surface. Don't, you know, when you try to go under with the spatula, you know, give it a little lift. And when it's ready to be flipped, it will be free. If you're sticking, it's not ready.
It's not ready to flip.
And then you're going to get a disaster when you flip it over.
How long does a burger typically take to cook?
Depending on how hot your grill is, you know, probably I would usually shoot for 3 to 4 minutes aside.
Oh, my God, that's it?
Yeah.
I am overcooking it.
Are you overcooking it? Is that what it is? This is my standard question whenever we talk about grilling, because I know the answer, and it always surprises me. I was always under the belief that you wanted to keep flipping your food over and over and over again, but no, once per side, right?
That's it. Sometimes if it's a thick steak, you might have to go back and forth, unless you want to do like a reverse sear, which is a method a lot of people use now. Mm-hmm. That's more involved, but the finished product is phenomenal.
I'm not ready for the reverse sear. I'm just not ready.
I put the steak on a hot grill at first to sear it,
and
then you flip it over, and then if you want to really get creative, you just switch the direction of it so you get the cross marks on it.
Yeah,
that's an advanced move.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Just be careful, Wendy.
So Weber is kind of thought of as, you know, everybody has them, the kind of the original kettle grill and all that, and you guys have a great selection there, but what are for people who want to kind of branch out, because here's the thing that's cool is even on the grilling side, there's so many other options out there, you know, even for a charcoal grill, like whether it's a PK360, those are awesome.
Yeah, they cook and they can smoke. I mean, they're cast aluminum, so they're very heavy duty, you know, holds the charcoal for a lot longer than a kettle.
What's the Cadillac of grill? What is the, you go, oh, all right, it's really expensive, but it's worth it. What would that be?
Well, I would say more of the Bentley of grills.
The Bentley.
It would probably be the Kalamazoo grill.
I was just looking at that. They're beautiful.
Tell us about the Kalamazoo grill. What's going on?
They're handmade in Michigan. They're dual fuel, so you can put in charcoal in the drawer. You can put cook with gas if you just get home late. You can put in charcoal. You can put in logs.
It does everything.
It does.
There's no smoker in that, though, too, is there?
They make a smoker, but it's a separate item.
Okay. What would a Kalamazoo? Wendy's probably going to get me one for Christmas. What would that cost her?
Wendy must really like you.
Are you all
the
about
jumbo?
Size?
I want the biggest one you have
on a car
with a retractable dome.
Well, and it's got the rotisserie, maybe the pizza oven.
Somewhere around $22,000.
Yeah, that's worth it. Yeah.
What?
Come on, Wendy, just do it. Well, $22,000.
Wow.
So that's truly like an aspirational, I'm sure financing is available at Backyard, but aspirational kind of cooking device. But they make beautiful stuff, and they've got, you know, rotisseries and pizza ovens and all sorts
of
things.
Did you sell any this year yet? Kalamazoo? Have you? At $22,000. Sure. Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
So when it comes to, here's the other side of it on the burger thing, is, and people come down on a bunch of different ways, but what's the meat ratio, you know, as far as like the meat to fat ratio, and should you put other meats? And some people are adding some extra, either brisket into their burgers or other bacon.
I think I've seen that. I think Al Cheval uses that blend of brisket and ground beef.
Yeah.
I think it's probably 80-85%, you know, beef to fat. And then
that's like ground chuck usually.
Yeah, that's, I think, cooks the best. And also, just I brought you guys a gift today, a little Thermoworks Thermopop. So you always want to cook everything to a temperature.
Sure.
Do you like it medium rare? How do you like it done?
I like it medium.
Medium. So I would pull it somewhere in the high 120s and then let it rest. You know, somewhere around 128 to 130. Let it rest. And it should be perfect.
And do you recommend as any seasoning? I've heard just salt and pepper is the way to go with a burger.
I like a little bit more than that. We saw a bunch of different rubs. I like, well, a little bit of garlic in there, something like that. With a steak, if it's a very good steak, you know, you buy it from the butcher, a nice prime steak, I usually just go salt and pepper. But burgers, I like to get a little bit more flavor on there.
What's the ideal shish kebab?
The ideal shish kebab, probably, I like to marinate those a little bit.
Yeah.
And then make sure you cut the meat proper size to the vegetables so you can flip it once and get it done,
you
know, depending if it's chicken or beef.
So, but line it up for me. What do you have on the perfect shish kebab?
I'm not a mushroom person.
You stay away from the mushrooms, you say. Yeah.
But I like the peppers.
Onions, green peppers are good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably it for me.
My favorite, pineapple. Love the pineapple
on
there.
That is good, yeah.
See, that ruins like a maybe if you're doing like a teriyaki chicken, but with a steak, you would still do a pineapple?
I would still do it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
so good.
Yeah.
Too
you
sweet.
Just get a little bit of the pineapple on the steak, but the pineapple grilled is so good.
That is good.
So good.
And then also kind of paying it forward on the education side. There's only so much instruction we can give here on the burger side, but for some of those more complicated things like the pork butts and the briskets, that you know the top things that people want to learn how to make, you guys, before we let you go, you guys have classes, right? We have some of the best people in the country coming in and teaching.
Yeah, we do. We have guys that come from Kansas City, local guys here like Charlie McKenna, and a couple
of
rib
class with Charlie McKenna.
Yeah, we just had that last week. That was
What's going on? Why is Kansas City? Why has that become the place for barbecue? What's going on there?
There's a lot of restaurants. I mean, it has a history of barbecuing there. Texas, there's the Kansas City guys don't like the guys from Texas.
They don't.
Vice versa.
It's a friendly rivalry.
There's the two sides of Carolina where there's a vinegar
North
side.
North and South. And exactly. Like, yeah? So, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
What are they doing within their grilling that makes them at odds? What's going on?
I think some of it's the sauce. Some of it's the way they prep it. Like Texas brisket is just salt, pepper, garlic. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, Kansas City, I think, uses more other seasonings also in there. And they all just like to argue.
Can you just taste a meat, Dan, and know the region that it's from? Are you that good?
Like, I am not sommelier. That good.
No. Meat whisperer.
Meat whisperer. I'm not that good. But,
no.
To me, I like them all.
Yeah.
I mean, they all have their different.
I have one brisket question, and then, Dan, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No.
I like it chopped as opposed to sliced brisket. Mm-hmm. Isn't it way better when it's just kind of chopped up?
It is. Well, usually they chop the end of it, the deckle.
Yeah. You know,
and they usually,
the deckle?
Yeah, and they usually, there's a flat part, which is like the first cut brisket, and that's what's usually sliced. And then the other part is usually chopped, made into burnt ends or chopped up and sauced, because there's a lot of more fat in there.
It's so good like that.
Yeah. Yep. And so for people who want to get out there this weekend and get some of these things and have the best kind of grilling out 4th of July time that you can, make sure you give the website for people to see the classes and everything going on.
It's backyardbbqstore.com.
It's a lovely website. And there's a little green egg that is just steaming.
It's a big
and
green
it's
egg,
making
I'm
me salivate. I don't know. Why is it when you just smell barbecue, even if you just had like a five-course meal, you're hungry again?
Dan is salivating all the time.
I told you, I put about 40 pounds of pork on the egg this morning. I had a guy text me about 7:30. He goes, I rode my bike by your place. Is that grill going already? I go, sure.
Wow.
It's so good.
Must be good.
Nice to see you again.
Thanks
for having me.
Dane?
And so tomorrow night, 7 to 10, we're going to have sort of an on-the-road 4th of July special. So we'll be talking all sorts of patriotic stuff.
Wonderful.
Everything about it. And then Saturday at 2 o'clock for On the Road, our regular show.
Perfect. Great to see you guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Quick break, some news, more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Introducing the unbelievable American under $7,800, the Plymouth Sundance Series. Plymouth Sundance, the best value of any car in its class, including the imports. 47 standard features to convince you, 5-year or 50,000-mile protection plan to assure you. Plymouth Sundance, the unbelievable American under $7,800. The pride is born in America.
Yesterday, we lost one of the giants of the auto industry, Lee Iacocca, who built Ford up, who rebounded Chrysler when it looked like Chrysler didn't stand any kind of a chance of surviving. They brought in Lee Iacocca, and he turned things around for them. Tom Appel joins us right now, the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, contributor to the Daily Drive blog, and all-around car expert. Tom, thank you for being here. Greatly appreciated. How are you?
I'm good. Happy summer.
Happy summer to you. I said this earlier, and I just want your take on it. He's probably the most influential car man, if not the most, one of our generation. Would you agree with that?
I completely agree. Once you get past sort of the Henry Fords and the Ransom Olds and some of the foundational guys, yeah, I think he's one of the most significant automotive leaders really since then.
And I'm sorry, but I don't really realize he started with Ford. I guess I only became familiar with him when he came in and helped out Chrysler.
Yeah, the Ford thing is interesting because a lot of people weren't really paying attention. I think you need to be my age, I'm in my mid-50s, to really be aware of what he did at Ford. But without Lee Iacocca, we probably would not have had the Ford Mustang.
Oh my God, that would have been a travesty. That's best-looking car.
Yeah, it's amazing because we can credit Lee Iacocca directly for establishing two categories in the auto industry that probably wouldn't have existed: the pony car with the Mustang and the minivan with the Caravan and Voyager.
He was the president of Ford when he was only 40 years old, and I know he was with them for years and years, but he never really saw eye to eye with the owner, with Henry Ford II, the owner, correct?
Yeah, he was a little abrasive, and I think that wore away on the Fords. Henry Ford was the CEO at the time, and Lee was the president. And I think the board and a lot of the Fords who were in control of the company just didn't like the guy.
Tell the story, Tom. The Mustang, we hit on it briefly, but what did he invent the Mustang, or why was he considered to be the champion of the Ford Mustang?
I'm not entirely sure who invented the idea, but Lee Iacocca just loved the idea, and he pressed very forcefully for Ford to move ahead with it. And it was an amazing product because it was supposed to be very inexpensive to build. It was based on the Ford Falcon, and there weren't really high expectations. They kind of thought they'd sell about 100,000 of these a year, but but Iacocca pushed it through, and in the first full model year, which was a long year because they introduced it early, they sold 400,000 Mustangs, completely changing the automotive landscape. And if we didn't have the Mustang, we wouldn't have had the Camaro, the Firebird, the Javelin, the Challenger, and all these other pony cars that followed.
My cousin Susie had an orange Javelin with racing, the black racing stripe. Very exciting. Yeah. The 69 Mustang, to my eyes, is still one of the greatest looking cars ever.
Oh, I think a lot of people agree with you.
The thing that everybody always said about him, Tom, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, was that he had this unique ability to understand what Americans wanted in a car and provide it for them. It's something that seems so basic. Why wouldn't every car company do it? But he just had a knack for it, huh?
Yeah, he really did, and I think that he should be remembered best as probably a salesman. You know, he could sell people cars, but most importantly, when he got to Chrysler, he sold the U.S. government on guaranteeing loans of over $1 billion to save Chrysler, and that took a lot of salesmanship.
I'll go on.
I want to ask about the minivan. Now, he put that, Bill, you had said that earlier, and I still doubted you. I needed Tom Appel to confirm that.
Yeah.
But there was no such thing as, like, a family van prior to that, just work vans?
There were a couple of things that looked like minivans, but Chrysler really defined what that was. It was really the original Plymouth Voyager and Dodge Caravan that totally established that niche. And the word minivan was first applied there.
Interesting.
I know this falls more under the bracket of advertising, but I think you'll be able to answer it anyway. He was probably the first guy who was a high-ranking official at a car company to do their commercials. When he was with Chrysler for a long time, if you were watching a Chrysler commercial, you were seeing Lee Iacocca. And then there was a tagline that I'm sure you'll remember where he'd say, if you can find a better car, buy it. That was brilliant.
It was fabulous, yeah. And a lot of people consider Lee Iacocca to really be the first American celebrity CEO. And he did a lot of ads, and I was watching him this morning. I'm like, wow, this guy was magnificent.
Would he be, if he were coming up through the ranks today, would he still get as far, or has the business changed, Tom?
I think the business has changed, but I think that a lot of leading executives have a bit more autonomy today than they used to. I think the corporate structure is a little bit looser, so I think he actually might have done fairly well today.
Is there even a I'm trying to think if there's a guy today who's similar to him, and no one comes to mind. Can you think of anybody?
No, the closest you can come, and I don't mean to insult anybody here, is Elon Musk, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Who's an extremely outspoken leader and believes in his own product and is willing to sell it.
Yeah.
Lito Anthony Iacocca was his name. And according to TMZ, in the 80s, Ronald Reagan appointed Iacocca as chairman of the Statue of Liberty Ellis Island Centennial Commission. And he was tasked with raising money to restore the Statue of Liberty. So he went on to do other things.
Yeah.
What was he doing, like, his last few jobs?
Oh, well, he retired from Chrysler in 93, and I think he basically retired. He did some consulting, and then in 1995, he did a thing that kind of tarnished his reputation. He got involved with Kirk Kerkorian in what was a hostile takeover bid for Chrysler. That didn't end well for the takeover bid, but it did leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths.
Tom, there was a time where his name was thrown around as a possible presidential candidate. Do you remember this?
I do remember that.
So why didn't that play out?
I don't remember what came of that. I don't know. I don't know ultimately why he didn't do that. Maybe just neither party chose to reach out to him. But I remember that well, and he seemed like an excellent vice presidential candidate, actually.
Yeah. Although, keep in mind, a couple of decades ago, the mere idea of a guy running for office that high who had no political background seemed impossible. Of course, that's changed now, but back then it just seemed very, very unlikely.
Yeah, and there was precedent, too, because Ross Perot had come from, I think it was called EDS, rather famously, to run for president, which coincidentally was a division of General Motors at one point.
All right, there's a text that we're getting. I'm 36 and have no idea who this car guy with the funny name is. And it's true. I have to be completely honest with you. What was he, 94 years old?
Yeah.
I thought he had already left this car dealership.
Well, it was a very, very low profile for the last decade plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you remember the ads, which were incredible, the name Lee Iacocca may not stick with you.
You know who kind of reminded me of him for a little while there, Tom, would be John DeLorean.
I think that's an absolutely great comparison, because DeLorean was one of those guys, and he sort of bucked management when he was at General Motors, and he also did great things. John DeLorean was really the father of the GTO, more or less inventing the muscle car, but when he took off on his own to start the DeLorean Motor Company, that took considerable moxie.
Yeah.
And DeLorean was famous at General Motors for stirring things up, especially the dress code.
Yeah.
He didn't like blue suits.
Yeah.
Where does Bob Roorman fit into this?
It's a great question, Tom.
I don't know if I have a direct comparison for Bob Roorman to the Coca-Cola, except
tough.
They're both great salesmen and they do their own commercials.
Oh, so true.
And I'm reading he passed away from complications from Parkinson's disease. That according to a family spokeswoman. So that's sad. I did get the alert that he had passed away, 94 years old. Lived a pretty decent life,
didn't he? Sure did, yeah, and so instrumental in shaping the car business for such a long time. So, yeah, it's a big loss. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. What do you have coming up? Is there anything we should know about for you?
I have a regular schedule now for my appearances on the Nick DiGilio show.
Oh,
so
nice.
On the first Monday of every month.
Very, very nice. Thank you. Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, contributor to the Daily Drive blog, and as you heard, now a regular contributor on Nick DiGilio's show. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll take a quick break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Who's going to drive you home, Bill?
That's the question. No one knows the answer, Wendy.
Can I tell you, coming up, you can tune in to us. We'll be on WGN Extra, the stream. You can hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. They were at my house this morning bright and early to
Everything
fix a problem.
Right?
Air conditioner purring like a kitten, if that's what it does.
Oh, that's good news.
Somebody has texted us. We were talking about Lee Iacocca. I am not a car person, but the book Iacocca is a great, great book.
That was the number one bestseller for a long, long time years ago.
Another caller saying Lee has a superb autobiography, very inspirational.
Yeah. That was a big, big book for a long time.
Linda wants to share some memories about Lito Anthony Iacocca. Hi, Linda.
Actually, my name is Brenda, but close.
Hi, Brenda.
I'm
kind of sentimental, and I will never forget the excitement of myself and my family when we got a Dodge Grand Caravan minivan. My kids now still refer to it as the mom van. Oh, my gosh. Of all the vehicles, I'm in my 50s now. Of all the vehicles I've ever owned, that one is by far my favorite. And one thing I had read that I will never forget, I guess, Lee Iacocca personally was like the mastermind, and what was unique about the Dodge Grand Caravan and its counterpart, which was the Chrysler Town & Country. From my understanding, the unique thing is it had the spaciousness of like a large vehicle. I mean, it could seat seven, plus it had storage room, but it was built on a car chassis instead of a truck chassis. And I don't know if this is true, but I was told that that was what made it unique. And I was told that the year that they came out with it, Lee Iacocca slowly walked into the Detroit Auto Show, put his hands on his hips, slowly looked around the room, and when he saw that there was nothing else like it, a huge grin slowly spread across his face. And one last thing, like a lot of us moms had that same beautiful minivan, and when we finally outgrew it, then our kids all inherited it, and they were all driving it to high school. So it was a whole fleet of, you know, the next generation, my kids and other kids her age, driving that. And like I said, it's just my all-time favorite card. I just wanted to share that.
That's great, Brenda. Those are some great memories.
Thanks,
of
Brenda.
A car. We get so attached to them, don't we?
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda.
It must have been a hard sell initially because everybody's first thought of a van back then, I mean, we all kind of got accustomed to it, was you were using it to haul equipment. It wasn't a family vehicle. You were using it if you were bringing heavy things from place to place.
Well, we never needed one, you know, because there were only three kids. But there were some neighbors that had it, and it was like a mobile home at that time. You'd walk in, and it's like, wait a minute, there's, you know, armrests in the back? What?
Right.
I mean, it was just pretty amazing.
I know.
We never had a van.
I always swore there'd be no way in the world I would ever get one. And then when we had the girls, all of a sudden, we needed a larger vehicle. And it's when We had the one the first year that they put a TV screen back seat, and that's all it took. Like, as soon as my wife and kids saw that, it's like, well, this is what we have to have. It's got a TV in the back.
We did a Jeep when the kids were little with the DVD player.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, otherwise it's like, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we
Ours
there yet?
Ours wasn't even a DVD player. It was for cassettes only, and it worked for the first, I think, 5 days. It worked really well. And then
that's a bummer.
I know. They hadn't quite perfected all of the technology quite yet.
I never got a minivan, but I feel like if you only have two kids, you don't need one. Once you have that third kid, that has pushed you over
I felt like I so sold out. The day we bought it, you know how usually when you buy a new car, you go home like, this is the greatest thing. I just felt like I gave in. I always said I would never buy a minivan, and then I
had one. Never say never.
I know.
And Mary Lou wants to share a Lee Iacocca story. Hi, Mary Lou.
Hi, Wendy and Bill. But before I talk about what I called about, before everybody had vans, there were only station wagons.
Yes.
You either had a van for your business or you had a wagon for your family.
Yep.
Anyway, what I called about was that he always told people, if you forget how to spell my name, it's I-A-C-O-C-C-O-A, which means I am chairman of Chrysler Corporation of America.
That worked out nicely for him, didn't it?
It sure did.
Wow. Thank you for that.
Anyway.
Thanks for the tidbit.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
Did you guys have a station wagon at some point?
We had an AMC Hornet, not the Pacer wagon. We had a Hornet station wagon, so it was kind of like a smaller one.
The funniest one, we had two when I was a kid. We had one for a while and then sold it and got another one, was the years that they had the fake wood paneling.
Oh, we had that.
You had that one. What was the point of the fake?
It was just contact paper.
I know. No one in the world was fooled into believing you had wood paneling on your station wagon, but it was such a status thing to have. Hey, does this look nice or what?
You know what's so weird is
it
was lime green. Our car was too. It was lime green with the wood paneling. And it was just like a compact station wagon. It was almost sort of like a hatchback.
Right.
And you did see all those station wagons with the wood paneling, and sometimes there'd be like a trim.
Yes.
Ours didn't
that
even have trim.
That made it even more nice, didn't it?
Well, yeah, because it finished it off. The other one, honestly, I could have peeled off the wood.
I know.
And it's so amazing to me, the colors of cars that have changed. When I get a car now, I am all about like muted colors. Like I want taupe or gray.
Nothing flashy.
No.
Right.
And things that other people can see so they don't hit you.
Yes.
Honestly, taupe and gray really, you know, in this where we get all the salt in the winter, they can't see you at all.
Right. That's why the last three cars I've had have been salt colored.
Oh, me too.
It's just easier.
And black cars are really cool if you keep them clean and wash them every second. I've had a white car, too, and those are just as hard as a black car. You have to keep them clean. But you go with the gray or the taupe, it's salt, it's dust.
Yeah. When you had the station wagon, did you like or hate sitting in what was called the way back, which was the backmost portion where you were facing the opposite direction? Did you like that or not like that?
This was such a compact station wagon that there weren't seats. It was either like, you know, you lay down flat. Which I probably did.
Good for kidnapping.
I probably put an Afghan that my grandma Nina made in the back and said, I'm going to do a slumber party while we're driving to Corvettes.
Yeah.
I led a really exciting life when I was little.
Perfect.
But you didn't like riding back there?
Loved it.
Yeah. You didn't get car sick?
I did not get car sick, but I don't know what the thrill in that was, but just...
It was different.
Yeah, it was different.
You always like to be going a different direction as everyone else. Very original.
That was the starting point for that. Coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.